thanks everyone for joining us today. I am Carly Kalua. I am the industrial hygienist for a pulp and paper manufacturing company, and I'm here with...
I'm Darcy Hendrickson. I am a safety engineer for pulp and paper manufacturing company, and today we have Rachel, who's joining us to talk about her background in safety.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of this. It's so nice to have something kind of more female-centered in the safety world.
I know. You know, if only people would hear us and be like, hey, maybe we should start making PPE that's focused for women, you know?
Yeah. Actually, there's a few really great brands out there that are starting, so I think we're kind of on the cutting edge of something that's going to be bigger in the future.
Yeah. Is it too much to ask that your, you know, high-vis vest is, you know, stylish in some way?
Or fits, like, within five sizes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So Rachel, could you tell us a little bit just about your background in general, not necessarily from safety, just kind of where you grew up kind of area wise? And
yeah, so I grew up in a small town called Anaconda, Montana. My family owned a logging and construction business, and we had kind of an interesting role that tied into safety in a way I never would have thought it would. So growing up, if somebody got hurt on a logging job, often they would come stay with us while they recovered as just part of, like, my mom was a housewife and had the availability to take care of people. And so, oddly enough, I had a lot of experience with workplace safety from a very young age, just from that point of seeing people who were in recovery in a very, very dangerous industry.
It is a very dangerous industry. I've never heard of that before.
That's super cool, though. And that's awesome of your mom to do that.
Yeah. I mean, she is like a caregiver. And how things run still in Montana in a lot of ways is just that, you know, people kind of take care of each other. And it's a lot of smaller family-owned businesses. You get a lot fewer large corporations out here. So although things are changing, like, that really was how it was.
Wow. I think you might be our first, so you are our first interviewee, but I'll be curious as we start interviewing people, because I think, like, Carly and I found we were so late to the safety field, you know, we weren't really thinking about it at a young age, and I'm guessing you kind of did.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of strange experiences in my childhood that led me to safety. For example, one time I was out fishing, and we were with a group of older guys, and a guy had a massive heart attack in a really, really remote area. And so, like, that kind of got me thinking about how you respond to these sort of things when you are in an environment that isn't really in a metropolitan area. You know, there are realistically a lot of job sites you can't even get ambulances to.
That's true.
Oh, right. And I suppose in logging industry, I mean, you can barely get your vehicles up to where you're logging.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because I went to a logging conference this year, and, you know, you compare logging to manufacturing, and it's literally a full generation or two behind in safety, just because I don't think they get as much oversight. I think they like it that way, but also it's just a hard moving target to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very dangerous work.
Yeah.
I wonder from an insurance side of things, if they kind of consider, you know, like where the Empire Building, when it was built, they considered how many deaths per floor. You know, I wonder if just as a matter of business in the logging industry, if they expect like a certain number of injuries.
You know, I don't know, because I don't think they publish that. But I know for their insurance costs, they're really high because it is such a dangerous industry.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was kind of so I was going to college in Butte, Montana, which has this like really focused engineering school. Like you can't even take an introduction to arts class. It's like solely focused on engineering. And I was going to school there. And how I kind of ended up in safety is I was in petroleum engineering. And I had done a summer internship, and I liked what I was doing, but I didn't think I wanted to like grow up and be a petroleum engineer. So the financial crisis hit, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to be a petroleum engineer. So I took a summer job working for an environmental reclamation company. And on the weekends, they needed somebody to run the forklifts and unload these huge plant deliveries we would have coming in. And they had nobody who wanted to stick around on the weekend, and I needed the extra hours to pay for school. So I was like, I can run a forklift. I'll stick around on the weekend and do this. And so I started working every weekend, just like operating a forklift, which I knew how to do from my childhood in construction, you know? And they started talking to me saying, hey, we need a new safety manager. And I was saying, well, I've taken some safety courses in college and stuff. And they said, is that something you could do, is come in and be our safety manager? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'd love to try it out. So I tried it out for a summer. And then the next year when I went back to school, I changed my major to safety.
Oh, wow.
Huh, that's a really neat story.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, you know, kind of a weird path that's led me here, but it's been really good too.
You have some awesome experience. I mean, that's something I'm kind of envious of, actually.
It's not as glamorous as it sounds, you know, being like a 21-year-old girl running a forklift on the weekends.
Huh. So, Rachel, when I first met you, you were working as a industrial hygienist?
Yeah, that was right. So after I graduated from college, I got a job for Georgia Pacific working as an industrial hygienist and safety coordinator. I did that for a while, but I knew I always wanted to go into consulting. So I made a jump and went into construction about a year and a half after I started working. Because if you're going to go into consulting, at least in my head, I thought you kind of need, you know, general industry and you need some consulting. You need some construction background because they're very different industries. So I did that. And then I wanted to travel. And so I took off a year from my career and traveled around the world all by myself. I saw like 15 different countries, came back and went into consulting. And then since then, I've worked as a safety manager, and I've also started my own company and traveled while I was an entrepreneur. So my path has been like very different, but I think the thing that's great about safety is you can kind of make it your own.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true too. You can just always kind of pick when you're...
Yeah, you can. And I think especially as women, it's nice to have that sort of flexibility. You know, I always worried in safety if I wanted to have kids or if I wanted to do a different path, that it wouldn't be available. But what I found is that if you kind of push the boundaries a little bit, like it's a field that has enough demand, you can kind of make it your own.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's so many opportunities, especially with someone like you with that wide range of experience. You're kind of like my hero. I know.
I actually have a crush on your life, actually.
Well, that's nice to hear. It's been really tricky at times, you know, just especially this last about year and a half, I've been on my own, kind of figuring out how to make a business work if I could be location independent, because, you know, travel's been a big thing for me. So there have definitely been really, really scary times and really fun times as well. But I have to say, I've never regretted going into safety.
Wow. That's really cool.
That is neat.
Yeah. So as we are right now, I'm like living in Montana, about 2 hours away from where I grew up. I do some on-site work. I run a couple of safety websites, and I do consulting both online and in person. So it's been an exciting ride, but as of right now, it feels kind of like I'm figuring out the balance of where things work, and that's really nice.
Has your consulting work sort of ended up in a certain area, or do you really just dabble around and what sounds interesting, that's what you kind of do?
So I do most of my on-site work still out in the Portland area. That's where all my network is, where I know people and they know me there. And so I found like you are a little bit, or at least for me, I'm a little bit tied by where my network is. And I'm really glad for that because I love Portland. So yeah. I'm always happy for an opportunity to go back there. And then the online stuff kind of takes me around. Like I've had clients from Australia. I did a big project with clients from Qatar this year.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So, and then some Canadians as well, which Canada has some interesting restrictions and also kind of follows off OSHA and then builds on it as well. So it's cool to see what else is out there and what other countries are doing.
So if somebody was going to go in the consulting field, how do you think, you know, what would your advice be to go
You know, I would say there's a lot of big consulting firms out there that you can try to work with. So if you want to work for somebody else, that's a great way to learn how to be a consultant. I did that partly. I worked for AMAC Foster Wheeler, which is an international organization, for about a year. And then I also did some consulting on the side of my own. So like I would find projects and I would figure out the costs and submit an estimate and start doing them as well. I've also started working on Upwork in the last year. So that's like a freelancer website. And if somebody was working a full-time job and just kind of wanted to dabble a little bit, I would highly suggest getting on Upwork. There's not a ton of safety projects, so you have to watch. But when they do come up, they're really great experience and you start to get an idea of what it's like working in the consulting field, kind of like making your own projects and establishing a bid and relationships with clients and stuff. So it's a nice way to get into it without jumping off the deep end.
Yeah, and I can see that sort of builds your portfolio for when you go full-time.
Yeah, for sure. And I've also found some of the clients that I started working with on Upwork, I'll still work with them, but they've also sought me out, you know, just to work one-on-one on future projects. So once you establish those relationships, it really gets a lot easier.
Wow. So you have like a real business sense that, you know, usually you don't come out of college going into industrial hygiene, safety, and sort of business background, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because I learned the hard way. I was like, I can figure this out, you know, thinking, I don't know, maybe I was being cocky or something, but, you know, figuring out how to make a website and how to like drum up business online and do your own advertising. And you know how it is when you are your own small business, you end up doing a little bit of everything.
Right.
Yeah. Oh man, that was a tough learning curve the first year. It's been a bumpy ride, but it's exciting too, because you know, you either win or lose based on your own hard work. And it's kind of exciting in a way once you start winning a little bit to be like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, that's awesome. That was kind of be one of my questions, actually, was like, what is the biggest struggle you faced trying to go out on your own? It sounds terrifying to me personally, but
it is
amazing.
It's completely terrifying. So for me, I was not only going out on my own, but I was like traveling internationally while I did it. And part of the reason was like, I love travel. And another reason is it's a lot easier to live off savings when you're living somewhere that it costs $1,500 a month to live versus like if I had stayed in my apartment in Portland, that was my rent every month, you know?
Right. That's a big difference.
But then when I hit rough times, like about the time that the savings dried up and my business, I was like in this phase where I was like, am I going to have to go get another full-time job? I'm not sure if I'm going to make it. It was like I was living internationally and I was like running out of money and I wasn't sure, well, I don't want to go home and live with my parents. Do I, you know, go all in and get another job? And so it's like this time in my life where I was actually, you know, without a real home back in the United States, living in Airbnbs and stuff, which were fairly cheap, you know, in regards to rent and stuff, but still. That was the scariest point, is being international without a real place to go home and then wondering, did I just make a huge mistake? And at that point, I was like doing everything I could to get some publicity for one of my websites. And so I was interviewed by Fast Company and they did this article on like women having to be brave in business. And I was in the article. And
oh, that's awesome. That is awesome.
I was not sure what they were going to say though, you know, like they could have titled it Mistakes Not to Make.
That is very brave of you, I must say.
Well, it was funny because like it put me in this place where my back was against the wall. And so my options were, you know, give up the dream and go get another job for a couple years and try to figure it out, or just work like heck until you can find how to make it work. And I decided to go with option B and just work until I could figure out how to make it work. And it didn't happen overnight, but things did come together.
Wow. That's encouraging, I think. yeah. for anyone that wants to go on the, out on their own. Because sometimes you think that when you're working, you're like, you know, maybe you're not just getting that joy anymore from your job.
No. And also I'd say, you know, like, it's hard to keep a balance in a job. Like, you two probably have experienced at some point too, like, there's so many mundane tasks you end up having to do, which is the same when you work for yourself. But, you know, sometimes the rewards when you're working for others are a little bit less personal.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely agree with that.
That's a very political way to say it. So, Rachel, what would you see as like an emerging kind of trend in the kind of work that you're being asked to do?
I think we're using technology so much more in safety, and safety does tend to be behind the technology curve, but I'm seeing so many more companies looking for safety apps, looking for kind of plug and play solutions to where they can monitor their key performance indicators. And then a really cool thing that I love from both a safety and industrial hygiene standpoint is wearable technology.
Oh.
So like there's some really cool solutions for ergonomics out there where you can put sensors on employees and they can wear them for the day. And it'll give you a quantitative measurement of the type of strain that they're putting on themselves in terms of like lifting and posture and repetitive motions and all those key ergonomic factors. And so rather than just like taking a problem and giving some improvement suggestions, you actually have data to back it up. And that is a really cool thing to have, especially in industries that are kind of like dominated by engineers.
Right.
You know, they love to see the numbers. Yeah, so it's cool.
Yeah, usually you can get a lot more money and focus on a solution if you have those numbers. So that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. And you know, the other exciting thing that I'm getting more into is video. So like, you know, we're using video for everything now. And so we have so many more opportunities to make training and toolbox talks more interactive and more interesting. And so I think that's going to change things a lot. I think that's really going to improve safety overall.
So if you're a customer comes to you asking for like a plug and play kind of application, are you able to do that yourself? Or do you then bring in people to help you kind of provide that?
I bring in people to do the software, but if they're looking for like more of a program from a safety management standpoint, I could help with that, or like training that's ready made. Mm-hmm. We do that as well. But what I found is like at this point in my business, I am a jack of all trades hoping to specialize.
Right. Well, I think if you grew your company, you probably then could start specializing, right? Because you'd find somebody else that could pick up the components that you don't want to do.
Yeah. And see, that's kind of the thing. Like this year, I've done a lot of editing on my own documents and stuff just to make sure that everything's in line. And so, you know, I'm hoping to be able to hire editors, and I really want to get into video. So once I get better at that, you know, you have to hire video editors because it's just not worth your time at a certain point to do it anymore.
Right.
So I'm hoping to grow, but it is like I use the freelancer network for hiring people right now because that is just the best thing for me, because unless you're ready to move on and start hiring full time, it's a nice way to get that help without the commitment of having a full time employee.
They say that's where, you know, like industry's going in the future, is that we won't be employees. We'll all be like freelancers just picking up jobs and doing things and then moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, especially with the rising cost of insurance, I think there are some incentives for employers to go that way.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about back when you were a kid and your mom would take care of these people that were hurt though? I mean, that seems like almost the exact opposite. Like, I mean, I 100% like the idea of being like freelance work and all that stuff, but I tried consulting right out of school, and I was very thankful for the job, and it was a great experience because I got to go to different places, but I would spend a full day with a person and then never see them again, you know? So it's kind of exact opposite of how you started out. So just wondering if you've ever thought about that
aspect. You know, I haven't seen it from that aspect, But I think it's an interesting comparison to make because there is this part of safety that's so human driven, you know, like you actually do have to care.
Yeah.
You know, or else don't be in it, you know? And so like that aspect of like a community kind of looking after each other, I think really fosters faster healing for those who are injured. And it also makes taking those safety precautions more serious because you know the people actually do care about you. And that's such a huge element of it.
Yeah. So,
yeah, definitely from the freelancer standpoint, you miss that human to human interaction.
Yeah, I would think it would make things a lot more real if like our mill manager had to like house the people that got hurt and see how it actually affected them. Like, can you imagine? And I do think they care, don't get me wrong, but it takes it to a different level.
Oh yeah, that's a new level of caring. But it, you know, like it is, I think that so many of us are recognizing that despite all of our different avenues for connecting, we all feel sort of disconnected.
Right.
That's true.
And so I can see those community approaches as getting to be more of an important thing just from a human value standpoint, even if the corporation can't value it. Like, I think we as people do still.
Absolutely. Very well said. So I guess it's probably about that time where we should take a little break for our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Darcy. In case you weren't aware, I also do two podcasts in addition to this one. The Stories Women Tell and The Lost Girls. In The Stories Women Tell, I interview women from all walks of life and talk about things that influenced their choices, share advice, and find out what they're focused on in the future. In The Lost Girls, my co-podcaster Kimber and I discuss anything vampire or supernatural related and review highly rated horror movies with our own spin. I would love it if you would join my audiences for my additional podcasts. You can find them on all the major platforms. Thank you. Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. And we are talking with Rachel Walla. Rachel, could you kind of talk a little bit about any roadblocks that you've experienced in the safety profession?
Yeah. You know, I think I've been really lucky in a lot of ways because our field is still so male dominated. And I know that like nationwide, we're bringing a lot of attention to like equality and women being on an equal pay grade and those types of things. And I have to say, like, I have been treated respectfully and well throughout my career, but I have had times where I have found out through my male counterparts at work that there were significant pay gaps between me and them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's so disappointing, like, even with similar degrees and backgrounds and stuff. And so that was really hard. My first job out of college, I found that. And I was so disappointed because in a way I had felt like so accomplished and was so excited about my first job. And you know how it is when you first graduate, you're just like proud and excited to be out in the adult world.
Yeah.
And I found out that the guy who had my job before me was paid significantly more with, he had less experience in internships and all that sort of thing. And I was kind of like just depressed about it for like 2 or 3 days after I found out. And I was trying to think, like, I just felt like it was very unfair. And so yeah. I started doing research online about what I could do about it. And what I found a couple of articles saying was that the reason that there's a big pay gap between men and women isn't always just about biases. Part of the reason is that men tend to negotiate their salaries and yeah. women do not. And I had never even thought of negotiating my first job offer out of college. I thought you just went in and were grateful for getting a job offer, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of sat with that for a while and I took that information, and every job offer I have gotten since then, I have counter offered and negotiated for what I thought was fair. Sometimes I've got great job offers and I didn't think like financially there was a problem, but maybe I wanted to negotiate more vacation time. You know, and so it's things like that, like always pushing the envelope just a little bit. And that was a really scary, hard thing for me to do, especially asking for more money. I was really worried that the potential employer I was talking to would just say no. But what I found over my career is they expect you to counteroffer a lot of the time. And so that was a very valuable lesson for me.
I think that's actually, I was going to ask you for advice to give women that are, you know, currently seeking a safety degree, but I think that's, that advice is worth its weight in gold.
Literally. Yeah, it's been very, very helpful for me.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we actually talked a little bit about it in our first episode, but just how, and not that it's our fault we make less money. That's not what I'm trying to say, because there are certainly people that whatever, but yeah, that a lot of it is, I mean, if a company can get you for a cheaper price, then, you know, that's what they want to do. So yeah, you have to stick up for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a struggle.
And I think us girls in safety, like overall, you have to stick up for yourself a little bit. You know, you have to come to the table with a little bit more confidence and just, you know, put yourself out there and always, always back yourself up, because it is still a male dominated field, you know, and it does take being a little bit savvy and a little bit more confident than average, I think. And sometimes you have to fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Favorite motto.
I think that, you know, when you are like in a situation where, you know, back when you were working as a safety manager, I've noticed like when Carly and I have to go out in the field or something and address a safety issue that's happening right at that moment, you know, it's like, they're very reluctant. Like, do you know what you're talking about? You know, did you get some of that too?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very grateful for growing up in logging and excavating, where like, especially in Montana, they do not treat me special because I'm a girl. And I wished when I was growing up, they would be a little bit easier on me sometimes. And like, my dad wanted boys, and instead he got 3 girls and 1 boy. And so I always had to be one of the boys. And that experience really helped me in the industrial world. But you will still find, I still find at least when I walk into a job site, you know, they do kind of treat you like, do you really know what you're doing here? Are you just kind of like wandering out of the office? And I get this thing. I'm fairly mechanically inclined. I do like learning how things work. I love learning how a new industrial environment is and the processes that they have. Like, I think it's fascinating. But what I found is on my reviews, I always get this mechanically inclined sort of like, somebody will say that, yeah, you're pretty mechanically inclined. And I think the subtext there is for a girl.
Right.
But I'm just like, whatever, I'll take it.
Yeah. I think if I were to pick, you know, anything, you know, I'd rather be mechanically inclined than doesn't smile enough or something.
Oh yeah. For goodness sake. And I think, you know, there are those moments where you'll be in a meeting or out in the field talking with a group of guys and somebody will say something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I always think if you're going to be a woman in a male dominated field, you have to draw the line and just let people know where it's at. And most of the people that I've worked with have been really decent. And once you tell them where the line is, they won't cross it. But you do have to be ready to tell them exactly where the line is all the time.
And I think in, you know, where we work, it's, you know, industrial. So we have different people from different backgrounds. So you have that sort of, you never know what you're going to get out in the field, like the comments or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I would say, like, you know, although it's a bit of a wild card, I've met some of the best people of my life at work, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Carly, do you have anything else you want to ask Rachel before we let her go?
You know, I'm actually, it's funny because I've met you in person and I knew you for a little while as my industrial hygiene like counterpart back in the day. And I had no idea anything about this. So it's kind of like an awakening on my part. A little bit that Darcy always talks about how we've just lost that connection between people and we just forget to ask questions about people. So no, it's been absolutely wonderful hearing about your background and I'm so impressed. I would like to know more about your consulting business. So, you know, maybe I will need you one day.
Yeah. So if you ever want to get a hold of me, I've got 2 websites currently that I'm running. One is Snap Fox Safety. And so what it is it's an online portal. I do consulting through there. I do programs, policies, toolbox talks, those type of things. Oh, cool. Not the real exciting side of safety, but I'm getting into safety training this year, which is going to be more fun with more video. And then my other website is MontanaSafetyConsultants.com. So it's MT Safety Consultants, not Montana spelled out. But both of those you can find me on. I'm always available on LinkedIn and always feel free to reach out. I love to network. I love to help other people. And I'm pretty active on all the social media too. So just keep in touch.
Okay. Awesome. And I would ask that you keep us updated on what's happening. You know, we have that group on LinkedIn. We really do want to know if you see some trend or something and you want to share it with the group. We would really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's such a cool group to be a part of.
Yeah.
We think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we wish you luck in your consulting business. It sounds like you just have so much opportunity ahead of you. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. You were probably the best candidate we could have picked for our first interview. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Rachel.
Yep. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Hey, so we just got off the phone with Rachel, and she mentioned how technology and video training is kind of the next big thing for safety, and we 100% agree. So we thought we'd do a quick segment on kind of our hot topic that's going on in our world.
Right. Hot topic in safety world or EHS world.
Almost anywhere, really.
Really, I know. So virtual reality training is one of those things that I think is happening right now in industry, in our own facility, elsewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like something from the future that we're like excited about it's coming, but it's actually going on as we speak. And from a safety perspective, you got to think, if you can teach someone how to do the job without actually putting them on the floor in harm's way, I mean, that's 100% win for everybody.
Right. And so we did a little research just looking into some articles that we could find that were talking about it and just looking at sources. So the first one we found was, which one is that, Carly?
The Professional Safety. So the journal, PSJ, from June of 2019, so very recent.
Right. Yeah, it's the monthly, is it monthly from ASSP?
Oh, yeah.
So we found an interesting article on Tyson Foods, not that we're in food manufacturing, but it's a kind of an interesting approach.
Yeah, right. So, they tried to this virtual reality training, kind of expecting a 15% reduction in injuries. And actually ended up with more than 20% reduction, which just to hit the goal of reduction in injuries is amazing.
But right.
To actually exceed that goal is pretty impressive. And I know Tyson Foods, they've definitely had some struggles in the past with mostly ergonomic things, but very serious injuries occasionally.
Yeah, I think fatalities, actually, if I remember correctly. The other thing that's kind of interesting is looking at information, we found an article from Automation World and by Aaron Hand, but really it was talking sort of about how Honeywell is using virtual reality and, just with this idea that they do what they call immersive competency, basically immersing their employees in this virtual reality system. Mm-hmm. And they are able to reduce the technical training that they have to do for their new hires or people new in a role from 6 months to 2 months based on just being so immersed in the topics, which is just astounding.
Yeah, so you think about the upfront cost might be a bit much, but 6 months to 2 months is a huge savings opportunity when you talk about training, especially in this world in constant overturn that most manufacturing experience. Facilities are experiencing.
Which is also interesting along with that, with this immersive competency that they use, they've actually seen a 15% higher worker efficiency.
Yeah, that's awesome too. We're all about being efficient these days.
Right. I mean, because you figure we're all, I think where everybody runs leaner and, if they have people that are more efficient on the job,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays we're doing more work with less people, and that's just going to get to more extremes. I mean, we're expected to do a lot more in less time. We're all about being competitive, and just the whole world is nowadays. So technology is really that cutting edge, and virtual reality is, even me, relatively young, I think so. It still just sounds crazy to me. And even at our facility, we have a 360 camera, so we can take video, so you could literally put these glasses on and see all around you. I mean, it's crazy to me that's happening right now.
Yeah, I've seen combinations of like drone footage along with the 360 cameras. And then, you know, when you're able to self-publish and do, so I'm familiar with using both Articulate and Adobe Captivate, both of those systems to do your own sort of LMS programs. It's really quite interesting, all the stuff that's available to you to make it more interactive and more real for an employee.
Yeah, I mean, there's just nothing that compares to being able to see exactly what you would be doing or need to be doing in the field. I mean, there's no PowerPoint comparison.
Right. No death by PowerPoint, that's for sure. The other article we found was with the Society of Human Resources, or SHRM. There's an article on why virtual reality training for employees is catching on. And one of the things that I saw was interesting is Walmart actually uses virtual reality training to help simulate for employees, you know, when they put a sale on. If you can picture, you know, the Friday after Thanksgiving, they have a special on TVs or whatever. They have a virtual reality simulator for teaching their people how to respond to how crowds are going to respond to a sale that happens. Is that just not the, I mean,
it's about a safety issue.
It is a safety issue. But the cool thing about it is, I think you see, once you bring it to your own company, I think you see this grassroots movement from hourly employees that are stepping up and sort of creating their own. Like, you start off doing it from a management level, but the employees are stepping up and owning it as well. And I think that's the cool thing too.
Yeah, right. They're the ones with the experience that need to be documenting this for the next person so they can learn from them. It's pretty cool stuff.
I know. Don't you wish we could just be, you know, doing really cool stuff all day long? Yes. So I think on that note, we're going to end the podcast for this episode. A big thanks to Rachel Wallet to have her do our first interview. That was pretty awesome. I think Carly and I are both a little jealous of her life and the opportunities she has, which is just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you work hard for something. And
yeah, she's a good example of that. Yeah.
So good for her. Thank you, Rachel.
So we are also, we'll post any of these links to these articles that we found if you're interested in checking out more about virtual reality. We would love feedback. So if you listen to this podcast and you have information, or please make sure to just give us a drop on our LinkedIn page. We have a group that's called Safety, the Future is Female podcast group. And then, of course, our podcast, we have a link on our LinkedIn page that you could leave us a voicemail message if you want to be part of our podcast.
Yeah, we would love to have you.
Yeah, male or female, but if you have just a message or a comment that you want to leave us that we can include in our upcoming podcast, we would love you to do that. We really want to know more information.
And yeah, that's what we're trying to do, is just spread the word and get more information out for us and for anyone that's listening. So thank you.
Yep. And I'm excited because today our podcast has gone live on Apple Podcasts platform. So with this process of using the Anchor app, it's sort of like a wave after wave of which platforms you get put on. So it's really exciting. I'm so thrilled that we're doing this project.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Hey, everyone. This is Darcy. In case you weren't aware, I also do two podcasts in addition to this one, The Stories Women Tell and The Lost Girls. In The Stories Women Tell, I interview women from all walks of life and talk about things that influenced their choices, share advice, and find out what they're focused on in the future. In The Lost Girls, my co-podcaster Kimber and I discuss anything vampire or supernatural related and review highly rated horror movies with our own spin. I would love it if you would join my audiences for my additional podcasts. You can find them on all the major platforms. Thank you.